Hello, and welcome to another episode of Django Chat. In this episode, we're joined by Frank Wiles, president of the Django Software Foundation, to talk about how Django is governed and how people can join and become more involved in the community. I'm Will Vinson. I'm joined by Carlton Gibson, as always. Hi, Carlton.
Hello. Yeah.
And Frank is our special guest. Hi, Frank.
Hi, everybody.
Can you give your quick background, how you got into Django and the many hats that you wear today in the Django community?
So yeah, so my involvement with Django goes way, way, way back. I worked at the same company as Adrian and Simon and Jacob, just in a different department. And they actually took over the web operations of the Lawrence Journal World from me at the time. That's a long story that's not very interesting.
We do have to ask though, what tech were you using before Django?
No, it was Perl. I've written a book on Perl. That's how into Perl I was.
Good. That's the perfect answer. I take your PHP and I trump you Perl.
Yeah. No, I worked mostly on mod Perl. And so, so I didn't need PHP, but, back then. So they, decided that they wanted to build something in Python, and I was like, oh, white space, that's weird. And I was like, that's fine, there's nothing wrong with Python. And so they went and they said, we've built something kind of cool, we kind of want to open source it. And so I helped argue with the suits and the lawyers for open sourcing Django. I'm an open source guy, not so much that I was a Python guy or even used Django. It wasn't until years later I ended up sharing an office with Kaplan Moss that I ended up, Ricky Ensley, she used to be at SysAdmin Magazine and Linux Pro Mag. She's at opensource.com now, and Red Hat. She asked me to interview Jacob because she saw that they were creating the Django Software Foundation, and she knew that I shared an office with him. And so she's like, could you interview him and maybe do a little intro to Django? And I was like, yeah, sure, I can do that. And I'm like, crap, that means I gotta learn Python and I gotta learn Django to do this intro. And I did. And I'm like, wow, this is so much better than all the stuff that I'm using in the Perl world, and just switched. And then Jacob joined me in RevSys, and the rest is kind of history.
So what's the timeline for when that happened? So who had the initial idea for the Django Software Foundation? Was it the early three?
It was the early three. And actually, the Simons that owned the Lawrence Journal World, they all had a discussion and realized that, you know, it would hurt adoption if this was, you know, seemed to be owned by a single company that might derail it or try to claw it back in some way.
So from the very beginning of Django,
it was probably a couple of years. It was probably 3 or 4 years after it was open sourced before the DSF was created.
Okay, that's still pretty forward thinking, though. Right? I mean, now that sort of makes sense, but that I don't think was as common. I mean, that you guys saw the future issues that now plague. I mean, like React had that whole thing recently with Facebook. Is Facebook going to take it? And yeah, that's
same with Node.js.
Right? Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, and that was part of the reason why I pushed for the BSD license, was because they were building a commercial content management system that they extracted Django out of, called Ellington. That they were worried about. Well, could something GPL? Could we accidentally trigger the viral nature of the GPL? And I was like, probably not. You'd have to really, you know, bend over backwards to do that. But BSD means you don't have to worry about it, and you can go your own way with Ellington, and you know, Django can go its own way, and it doesn't matter.
So you're currently the president of the Django Software Foundation. Were you the president from the beginning, or what's your role in terms of? Yeah, give us the history of the Django Software Foundation itself.
So when the foundation started, they set three board members, and it was Adrian, Jacob Kaplan Moss, and a guy named Dan Cox, who was in charge of the online interactive department of the Lawrence Journal World, and that was kind of the company wanting to assert some control, but not a majority control of Django, kind of for the next few years at least. Mm-hmm. And so after about 5 years, Jacob decided that he wanted to step down and that he felt he was getting too frazzled with too many hats. And so they were like, okay, well, we need to find a replacement for Jacob. The three of them talked about it, and they're like, it should either be Russell Keaton Gee, or because he's got a good relationship with the core team, or it should be Frank, because we know him and he knows business and nonprofits and law and that kind of stuff. And so they kind of debated it for a while, and they decided it should be Russ because of the core team aspect of that was much more important. And then Russ decided to step down after 5 years and put it up for an election. And then the community elected me. So it was kind of the original board's will being extended a decade into the future. So unofficially, we kind of have a 5-year term is what we've decided. So I've got like 2 more years and then I'll probably step aside, you know.
Okay. And what goals do you have in those 2 years?
My big goals are to help automate more of what goes on right now. For being a web framework, we don't do enough on the web that we in terms of automation. One of the things that's coming soon here is that by the time this gets released, it'll be announced. We put out a call for proposals to help automate becoming a member on the website.
Right.
And we only got one proposal, but it was a great proposal. It was from Jacob Kaplan Moss. And what he wanted to do was take the money and pay somebody else to do the work and mentor them.
Oh, that's perfect.
Right?
That's
so
perfect.
Find somebody who's interested in maybe helping contribute to Django, but mm-hmm. doesn't feel comfortable, and he'll mentor them into making these changes for DjangoProject.com.
Wow.
With the hope that they grow into perhaps a core contributor.
Yeah, that would be super.
Yeah.
That's one goal. The other is obviously, I think about the end game probably more than most people would. So I worry about what happens when Django declines. Do we have enough money in the bank to gracefully sunset Django? Do we have, you know, when the sponsorships dry up for hosting and if there's some legal fees at the end, do we have 20, 30 grand set aside to make sure that we can kind of gracefully sunset things in the waning years, whenever that does happen, right?
So you're creating a living will.
Sort of, yeah.
Can you just hit the high points of what the DSF does, right? I mean, because then there's a number of things, but what, if you're going to do it in hierarchy, beyond, you know, paying Carlton and Marius as the two Django fellows?
So, I mean, in order of what I think is the most important is definitely paying for the fellows and keeping Django's development, you know, marching forward in a very predictable and well-run way. I think that's the biggest impact we have. And then we also are the clearinghouse for the money, right? We can raise money from companies who would rather not give $200 to each Django Girls event because it's logistically hard. They would rather give us $10,000 and we then distribute it amongst various groups. We know the community better than them and they can write one check instead of 100.
What are those groups? I mean, Django Girls.
Django Girls is a lot. We get a lot of requests from regional Python conferences. So, you know, the PyOhio's, PyTennessee's of the world, a lot in not in North America, actually, is where we get a lot of those from. And then sponsoring a lot of events in Africa recently. We've been kind of getting a lot of requests, and it's been really growing in Africa quite a bit. Those are the
DjangoCon.
And DjangoCon, DjangoCon is self-supporting at this point. But yeah, we do help support with that and DjangoCon Europe. But yeah, those are the big kind of outlays of where money goes. But then also we technically own the intellectual property and the trademark for Django. So we defend the trademark if we see somebody using it in a way that they shouldn't, or that's misleading or would be confusing to consumers.
Does that happen a lot?
And not as much as you would think.
I can't think of an example where I've seen that, but I know that's a, you know, something you have to watch out for.
The most recent example is we had somebody name and they didn't do this in bad faith or anything. They named a library in NPM. They called it Django, And what it did was it shelled out and provided a way to use Django templates from JavaScript, which is not a bad use and anything. It was just confusing because you could npm install Django. And so, you know, we had to, you know, go through a legal process and discuss with npm for a little while how to, because it had dependencies and things. And so we had to have a little discussion, basically. It was nothing bad. But and then they eventually renamed it Django template. And it's like, okay, we're cool with that. Like, that's a better name for the library, you know.
And the board... The board is what, six people?
Six.
Now, right? And what are the roles there? Because you're the president.
Yeah, so the president...
Is that a big commitment?
It's not huge. It's probably less than most people think. I would bet I probably spend 5 to 15 hours a month, kind of depending upon the month. Certain months are a little busier than others when it comes to like tax time and election time and things like that are a little busier. But yeah, it's not a huge commitment, but you know, you need to be somewhat responsive to email, and some issues are more important than others. And you know, you want to make sure that, like, you know, like for like Carlton, if you have an issue with access or needing something, like I want to try and jump on that really quickly because I want to unblock you so you can be productive, right? Other requests are, hey, could we get some Django stickers? And that can wait a couple of days, you know? So you kind of triage things and deal with it as best you can. Then the vice president position is there if I were to get hit by a bus, or in the event I can't make a board meeting, they preside over the board meeting. And informally, they also take charge of bringing in new members and onboarding them. The secretary obviously takes minutes and deals with a lot of the paperwork. The treasurer deals with all the money and taxes and things like that. And so those are all the key positions.
Okay. But so I often think of like the board as having like the final kind of governance role of Django. You know, if we all fall out on the developers list and, you know, something goes wrong there, and not that we would, but you know, it's very consensus based, but what is the what is the board's position there? Is that as the kind of arbiter of last resort? Or?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely are. We've taken on that role definitely in terms of like code of conduct and things like that. I don't know how maybe previous presidents would have viewed it, but like right now, the way things are, like you said, everything runs well by consensus because we own the trademark and the intellectual property. If the core developers were to go crazy and, you know, just all leave or whatever, we would be able to claw back control of the development, right? If we had to,
right.
That would be the nuclear last resort option, but I don't ever see that happening. But yeah, I guess at the end of the day, if core development fractured or stopped in some way, we would have to probably step in and we'd be the logical ones to do it. But I don't see that ever really happening.
No, but it's like, as you say, it's like the thing of last resort. And the board is elected by the DSF members.
Yes.
So can you tell us how people might join the DSF?
So that's one of the big confusions, is that anybody can join the DSF. We're loosening things up. We had a restriction of you kind of had to be invited in by an existing member, which just slowed things down. And it's unnecessary. Previous incarnations, I guess, of the board were worried that bad actors might get voted onto the board. And I just don't think that's practical. I just don't think that's ever going to happen. You know, I can't imagine that somebody out there is going to be like, you know what, I want to join this nonprofit and run it into the ground. And so I'm going to get 200 of my friends to become DSF members and vote me in and mwahaha. Like, that's just never going to happen. Right? Like, no.
So you wouldn't, there's not going to be like a DSF Brexit.
Yeah, no, it's just never going to happen. Right. So why are we putting this artificial speed bump in to getting people in and getting people involved? Because as you know, we all know in open source, the littlest speed bump turns people away, you know, and that's just counterproductive to our mission. Right. So so right now there is a membership form on the site, and you fill that out and we basically check to make sure that you don't have like existing code of conduct violations and you're in. And we're going to actually make that process more streamlined and smoother. You know, it's nice if you get nominated by an existing member, like, hey, you should be a member, because sometimes people don't feel like they're maybe worthy or they should join. But, you know, if you're listening to this, you should join. You're worthy. Come on in.
Yeah. And like people, a lot of people I've found don't know that the DSF exists, that the Django Software Foundation is a thing and that you can join and that you should join. And, you know, that's where the future of Django is going to be built and decided. So
yeah. Well, so what, so you mentioned, Frank, the, you know, at some point there'll be a decline in Django, but looking forward, you know, what sort of upsides do you see? Because when I look at the landscape, I'm always struck by how few great web frameworks there are out there. I mean, there's, you know, in terms of like a batteries included approach, there's Rails, there's Django, I guess maybe Laravel. JavaScript doesn't have anything like that. I mean, there's so few. So I wonder, you know, what's the future of Django, right? I mean, Python is on the ascendancy, no question. So it seems to me like Django should do nothing but grow. So I guess if, you know, if things go well, how big could Django get, right? Like, what are the potential future challenges for the DSF, you know, if it 5-10x's in terms of the people using it with, you know, core Django, with Django REST framework. You know, we talked to Tom Dyson last week of Wagtail. You know, that CMS is incredibly popular. It seems just to me like upside all over the place. I'm curious how you view it.
Yeah, I don't think we've reached peak Django by any means. when I say I worry about the decline, when I first got on the board, I started to think about what are some of the things that non-technical that more technical people that have less kind of experience in organizations perhaps or in businesses maybe wouldn't plan for or think about. And so I wanted to make sure that we had a reserve, that we were, you know, taking in more money than we were putting out, but not an egregious amount, right? Like, we don't need a huge safety net, but we need some safety net.
You know, are there some future ways in which Django would morph where the DSF would need quite a bit more money?
That could happen. I don't know, you know.
I don't have an answer. It's an interesting question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It is an interesting question. I mean, I think that, you know, like most software, you know, an extra copy being out there doesn't add work to the DSF by any means. And, you know, only a fraction of people who use Django ever report a bug or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it would drastically change how things work kind of in the board and in kind of standard development. I do think that Django has room to grow, right? And I think if it's going to grow anywhere, it's going to grow in terms of REST framework and APIs. I think that the trend in the industry, I think the importance of things like Django forms and Django templates will continue to kind of diminish over time. You know, I'm a consultant as my day job. It's probably been a year or more since I wrote or worked on a Django form, right? It's all APIs at this point.
And you're working in teams, right? Because this is something Carlton and I have talked about. If someone, you know, a solo developer, you might not need or want an API, but certainly in a team setting, yeah, if you're a Django developer, you're primarily a API developer at this point.
Yeah. Well, and people a lot of times want the really rich front ends.
Yeah.
You know, in JavaScript and React and Vue. And so if at a certain point, if you're 90% of your site is going to be that, it seems silly to do 10% in something else, you know, even if it's perfectly fine, right? Like, there's a lot of times I'm like, why am I not doing this in a Django template? This would be so easy. But it's like, but then I like have part of my front end and part of my back end mixed. And it's just, it seems silly.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to also ask about is, so I remember when I was first getting into Django, which not that many years ago, seeing how Adrian and Jacob were both retiring as BDFLs. I just wonder, how did that influence things with the DSF, you know, to have two BDFLs, you know, so that's the Python benevolent dictator for life that, you know, because Guido van Rossum just stepped down from his role. So they sort of beat him to that. Did that have any practical change on the DSF and the day-to-day running of Django?
No, I mean, Jacob Kaplan-Moss is my business partner in RevSys. And so he talked to me about it before, you know, he's like, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? The thing was, is they weren't doing anything, right? They were there as the Supreme Court, right? And they hadn't had to hear a case in 3 years. And so it's like, what, why are we, you know, we're just getting this title. We're just keeping this title, and the community doesn't need us, and we don't need the title. Let's put it down and set an example that this can be done, right? That you can relinquish control to the community who, you know, at that point probably knew better than them what should be happening, because they, you know, removed themselves further and further away from kind of the day to day. So practically, yeah, I mean, you know, they still have logins to some things, because they're part of the core team and they're trusted members of the community. So, you know, if I get hit by a bus, that, you know, the Google domain still, you know, can be recovered and somebody still has access. But, you know, they don't have a day-to-day role.
Got it.
And that seems similar to the proposal about dissolving Django Core itself, right? In that, you know, that doesn't seem to be that active now, and it doesn't necessarily in the same sort of way. And so to send a signal saying that's not needed kind of is sort of parallel.
I kind of see it as, back to my Perl roots, many, many years ago when they first started development on Perl 6, Audrey Tang started a project to build the compiler, essentially. She did it in a way that was revolutionary, in that if you asked for a commit bit, you got a commit bit, and just opened it up. And, you know, the wheels didn't fall off. Right. Like that wasn't the reason Perl 6 took a decade to finish. Right. Like, but it actually, the development worked fairly well, because if somebody's like, hey, I'd like to help, they're probably capable, and, you know, they're probably not going to cause more trouble than they're worth. And if they do cause more trouble than they're worth, you coach them or ask them to leave or ask them to stop, and they probably would. Right. Like, it's you know, so I think that we're heading, I'm not saying that we should do that we should just give commit to anybody, but we're heading more in that direction of making it much more open and much easier to contribute. And I think that helps the project.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I've talked about this a couple of Django cons, that we have a small group who really do contribute and contribute a lot, but we've got a massive community. And if we can get more people involved, that just brings the issue count down. It gets things done faster. It, you know, makes the ecosystem healthier, and more for that.
So one question that I think would be really interesting to hear you talk about, Frank, is since you run a Django consultancy and you have clients coming in who don't necessarily care what the technology is, they need a solution. You know, when is Django not a good solution? How do you advise clients on that?
So you actually asked me about that a while back on Twitter as a prompt for a blog post. I've actually been thinking about that one, because I think that's probably the most interesting one I got. And I don't have a good answer, because there are very, very few scenarios I can think of where Django's a bad decision. I mean, if you have the world's highest traffic site and it only changes 3 times a year and it's got 4 pages, I would use some sort of static generator, right? Like, you know, if it's not dynamic at all, get Jekyll or Hugo or something. Like, Django would be kind of overkill. But if it's anything more dynamic than that, Django's a fine decision. That's not to say that Flask, Bottle, Falcon, you know, Sanic, any others aren't good choices too. It's just that I think sometimes people get a little hung up on, well, if I'm not going to use Django templates and I'm not going to use Django forms, and I'm, you know, then I'm somehow bloating my app with this megabyte or two of code in my Docker container somewhere, right? Like, it just doesn't matter. Like, I don't use all the Python standard library on a regular basis. It doesn't hurt that it's there. You know, we have my new laptop has 2 terabytes of storage in it. Like, it doesn't matter if the project has a couple extra megs of source in there. So yeah, I the only things I can come up with are, like, when you have really, really small requirements, super, super small microservices, you want to do it in an entirely async manner, and you want to do it in Python, and you don't want to do it in Go, right? Like, so, you know, it's something like that. Like, it really comes down to, I have a very small service. It's got 2 endpoints and very little logic, and I need it to be blazing fast, and it's internal only, and I don't need to worry about future-proofing it for things, and security as much, you know, that's, I think, one of the things you get with Django. This, you get this confidence that there's been lots of smart people who've looked at the security over the years and continue to look at it. And you know, that you get a lot of safety out of the box.
Yeah. That can, that continue to look at it thing is, you know, it's because it's so active, because it, you know, we have a release every 9 months and all the rest of it. It's like, you know, I can build something with Django now and it'll still be there in a year. It'll still be there in 2 years, still be there in 3 years, you know, without me having to do it all myself.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and the question of when not to use Django, because I think of beginners since I do a lot of teaching, and I mean, there is a learning curve to Django. I mean, as I've talked about, there's just a bigger learning curve of web development, which I think is, you know, whatever framework you start with, you associate the pain of that with the framework. But I think Django can be, you can build Hello World sites in Django quite quickly, actually. You know, Flask isn't necessarily a faster thing. I wonder if maybe with the async stuff, you know, way down the line, it seems like maybe there'll just be a revolution in how websites are done that Django just can't keep up with, async or otherwise, that would unseat it. But for a traditional website, the more I get into my career, and again, I'm the most junior of the three of us in terms of going along, I sort of don't care as long as it's decided. Like, I'd rather use tools that have a robust community and also tools that I know. It's fun to build side things, but, you know, boring technology is a positive thing. And the fact that, you know, for me, Django is a little bit boring at this point is great. Like, it's not a differentiator. It doesn't get in the way of stuff.
Well, I think, too, that, you know, people discount the human side of this equation quite a bit. Came for the technology, I stayed for the community is a quote you'll hear a lot of people talk about in the Python and Django communities. And it's true. Everybody's nice. Everybody's easy to work with. You know, you don't run into problem people anywhere on the level that you do in a lot of other projects. There are, and I think that means that we get to work together better, which means we produce better software and faster and more of it.
Yeah. Right? I think that's partly, I mean, that's set by example. That's the example, you set, and you've talked about the decisions that the DSF has made. I mean, Carlton, you know, obviously the example you set in speaking and interacting with people. I mean, the top Django people are all really nice, generous people, without exception. So that really trickles down, I think, to the community as well. Whereas if you have a Linus type of person at the top, that also filters down.
Yeah, that filters into the community. And I think it's telling that we have one award and it's for being nice and welcoming new people, right? We don't have a who pounded out the most code award or who won the most technical arguments award. We have the who was the nicest and helped new users the most award.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, any last things we want to mention on this talk? Because I'm really excited to share the, you know, DSF, because again, I wasn't aware that it existed a couple years ago. And, you've answered some questions I had, even though I've read the docs on what it is and how it works.
Yeah, I just reiterate, you know, join the DSF, you know.
We'll provide a link so everyone can do that.
Great.
All right. Well, thanks, Frank, so much for joining us. And Carlton, I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, Frank. Take care.
Thanks a lot.